Hi, I'm Chris Lukianenko, and this is the Intelligent Workplace brought to you by LiveTiles. My chance to speak with the industry experts and explore the new ideas and technologies that are shaping and transforming the modern workplace. James Dello describes himself as a human-centered designer and technology strategist, which makes him the perfect guest for this new podcast series. You see, this series is all about exploring the possibilities in the world of tech that the intelligent workplace presents. Where can we go with it? How do we get there? What technologies will we pick up for the ride along the way? Today, James is going to help me to begin my journey into the world of the intelligent workplace with a bit of a focus on the people aspect in this first episode. James is a human-centric solution designer and an engaging presenter who you may have seen discussing digital transformation and the future workplace at events such as WorkTech and the Center for Workplace Leadership's Future of Work Conference. He's been quoted in newspapers, appeared on television, has a master's in business and technology, and is a published author. I feel like I'm going to learn a lot from him today. So welcome to the Intelligent Workplace podcast, James Dello.
Hi, Chris. It's very nice to be chatting with you today.
Thank you so much for joining me today, mate. I'm really excited to have you on as my first guest on this new podcast journey.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Really good to be here.
Now, mate, there is so much to get into on this topic, but before we do, why don't you share with our listeners a bit about your background in this space, and then they'll understand, I think, why I was so keen to get you on.
Sure. So my background has really been, I guess, helping organisations for quite a while with trying to get the technology right around anything related to collaboration, knowledge work, information work. So getting things done inside an organization using technology. In more recent years, I've started to get involved not just with what we might call the digital layer of work, but also looking at the physical layer of work and how the technology and the physical layers come together. Because obviously work doesn't happen, or the digital work, if you like, doesn't happen in a vacuum. We're always working somewhere or with someone, even if we're not physically sitting next to them.
Well, mate, I think that makes you the perfect guest. So what I would like to leave the listeners with at the end of this podcast is a bit of a picture, a definition, if you will, of what the intelligent workplace is. And that's where you come in. But it seems to me it's a bit of a moving target because of the rapid changes in technology surrounding it. So to get started, why don't you give me your elevator pitch of what you believe the IWP to be right now?
Sure. So I know we're going to focus on the people side, but it's actually pretty hard, I think, to really truly disconnect, you know, technology from people. You know, for my money, we've got to step back and look at the big picture initially, and then we can zoom in and focus on the people aspect specifically. Now, I sort of look at this through a lens. I've got a bit of an architecture I've been building, a reference architecture for the role of technology in the workplace. And I start, you know, at that physical building layer, and I build my way up. And I think for the intelligent workplace, there's a very practical efficiency layer. And we might see that in the way that we assign space and monitor how space is being used. There's also automation, you know, things like the environmental controls. Is it too hot or too cold? And if you're working in a building, those little factors are actually quite important. And they can be, those can be improved through different feedback mechanisms and made intelligent so we can really have that optimal physical workplace experience. As we move up through that, then we get into the what I call the productivity layer around work support tools and the kit of parts, which is a combination of the software and hardware we all need to get our jobs done. And certainly there's a role there for using intelligence to make that work support as efficient and as clever as possible. So whether that's around the broad basics of productivity, which might be using a smart email client to prioritize the most important emails, to also looking at analytics that can help us to improve how our teams perform. There's a lot of opportunity in that productivity layer. Then there's another layer on top of that, which I think is really what's becoming increasingly important as a differentiator. So the productivity layer, that's really about the quality. The more you invest in good productivity support, the better the outcome's going to be. But then we look at the experience layer, and this is where I think we can differentiate, because that's going to be even more reflective of things like culture and innovation and the values of an organization about, what do the people think is important? And again, the intelligent workplace can play a role here, whether that's around the personalization of that experience of being in the workplace, or it might be around innovation and knowledge sharing. It can also be around health and well-being. There are a number of areas where we apply intelligence, build a smarter workplace that can actually anticipate and also provide the capabilities to deliver certain experiences. So now in terms of a pitch then, so that's setting the scene.
Yeah, I was just going to say, luckily we're on a very long elevator trip together.
That's right. It's a smart elevator. It knows I need to talk to you. But I think it's important to set that scene. So the productivity layer, as I said, the elevator pitch is about quality. The more you invest in that productivity support, the better the outcome is going to be. On the experience layer, this is really where we get into the really important things, though, because, you know, you can go to any organization. If they've invested well in productivity, you're going to enjoy that. But, you know, it might not be enough to keep you engaged. It might not be enough to keep you working at that organization. That productivity layer is actually what I call a hygiene factor. You'll know if it's wrong and you'll be disappointed. But, you know, it's the experience layer and how we make that smarter, that's going to be the thing that makes you want to work in an organization. It's going to be the thing that impresses you.
I feel like there's such a focus on user experience these days within the intelligent workplace, but also for many companies, the user experience wasn't even a consideration only a few years ago, was it?
No, look, you know, there was a running joke that certain enterprise applications, the people that built that software, you know, they were paid based on the number of complex screens they could create. You know, their job was always to make it a bad experience for you. And of course, you know, I'm thinking of things like expense claims.
Oh.
You know, the expense claim, your employer, I guess the system owner, they know that you want to get your money back from that work expense. There's no motivation for them to make that a great user experience. But yeah, you're right, because people have now seen, though, particularly when you go outside of an organization, we know what a good digital experience is. And we come back into the workplace and we go, hang on, why am I being made to click 10 times to do a really simple transaction? It's taking me half an hour to complete this task. You know, that's not good enough.
No, not at all.
So user experience is becoming more and more important. And I think the factor here is there are two sides. One is if you've got a system or a process or a strategy that requires people to voluntarily engage with that solution or system and perhaps maybe to contribute above and beyond what their job description says, you know, it's that sort of organizational citizenship behavior, you're going to have to deliver a really good user experience. So that's sort of on one side. The other side is really literally, don't waste my time. You know, things are moving fast. And if I'm trying to serve a customer more effectively, and that's both at a simple, you know, frontline level of can I process this transaction well, to I'm dealing with a customer with a complex problem. If it's going to take me days to resolve, you know, they're both ends of that spectrum. It's a problem. So it's a combination of, you know, voluntary citizenship behavior and the pace of service delivery is increasing and clunky applications that just don't cut it anymore.
Yeah, it feels like the technology is moving so fast and we're now allowing ourselves to reimagine what it means to interact and collaborate in the workplace and giving birth to this intelligent workplace idea. I feel like it's a really, really exciting time to be in the tech space. Do you?
Oh, definitely. You know, for many years I was chatting to people, technologists, HR people, comms people, even architects. And we had ideas about how we would like to be able to engage with employees and the kinds of solutions we'd like to provide to them. But, you know, really, it was kind of blue sky dreaming. I remember talking many years ago to some people in an organization. It was one of the early co-working spaces, and they had access to one of the first digital cordless phones. So, you know, the analog ones were good, but they had a short range.
Yep.
And then they introduced digital cordless phones and they extended the range. Well, the receptionist could go down to the cafe at the bottom of the building to get coffee orders for people and she could still answer the phone. And they thought that was amazing. So that was cutting edge, having a cordless phone with a good range. Yeah, mobile computing, cloud computing, they really are critical elements of what is change both our ability but also our aspiration of what workplace technology should do and what it, you know, what that experience should be. So you're right, it's not just a feeling that things are moving faster. We have opened this box of tricks and all of a sudden we've got all this fantastic stuff to play with, and guess what, there's more to come because we've got augmented reality, we've got digital twins, there's so much going on and so much more we can do.
How do you see all these, you know, fast moving changes improving, you know, sociability amongst colleagues, which can ultimately lead to improved collaboration in the workplace?
Yeah, well, this, you know, I was talking earlier about setting the scene and talking about this architecture. And this is why I sort of divide the world between this idea that there is some physical infrastructure, for example, and there's a lot of technology in the physical workplace these days. And whether that's a proper office or your home office, I've had to switch off Alexa for a little bit while we're talking because she'll jump in and disturb us. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, where you're working, there's a sort of a base technology layer. Then we've got that productivity layer. You know, the trouble is that productivity layer now allows us to work in very different models. so we can have everyone working together. And again, technology has the potential to enhance or detract from that co-located experience. We might have a hybrid model where some people are together and you've got people scattered around. And then we can have that true remote model. And the real extreme of true remote is everyone working at different times and different places.
Yes.
That creates challenges for us because, you know, we're not robots. You know, if you need a robot, get a robot. Humans are social creatures. Even if you're a bit introverted, you still want some kind of social support, and that's going to feed into your level of engagement in the workplace. I mean, we won't go into it now, but there's plenty of studies around workplace loneliness, for example. It's a huge, huge issue today.
Yeah, I feel like that could really affect engagement with the overall business as well.
Oh, definitely. And look, when we look at the history of people working in remote or telework settings, it's often been framed in a bit of a them and us. So there's everyone back at the office, and then there's these weirdos sort of working invisibly somewhere. And there's always been a bit of a tension of, you know, oh yeah, we're in the office, we're the real workers here, we're in at 9, we're out at 5, yeah, we're doing the hard yards.
Yeah.
What's that guy doing at home? Who knows what he's doing? He's probably feeding his cat. there's always been this sort of issue. What we've forgotten though, conversely, is that person that's working remotely was sort of wondering, you know, does anyone know I'm here? Do they value my contribution? Can they see that I am contributing?
Yeah.
I've come to realize that really effectiveness of the workplace today, where we have these different models, is really sort of not looking at it as a them and us issue, but it's everyone together and how can we work effectively regardless of where you are at a particular time.
Are there any sort of ideas you've got around, you know, how to, you know, virtually bring those people into the fold with their coworkers so that they don't feel that sense of loneliness or feel like they are contributing and getting the kudos that they deserve from their colleagues?
Yeah. So again, you know, keeping this sort of simple in a way is this two model. One is the productivity layer and one is the experience layer or the differentiator. So the productivity layer, you know, I was saying just now that we've really got hybrid workplaces where you have some people together, some people not, or even coming in at different times. So the productivity layer, the first thing you need to do is deploy technologies that increase the level of transparency around the work that's happening. So I'm talking about things here as simple as a Yammer group, or it could be a bit more task orientated around a digital Kanban board. It also includes giving people access, you know, direct access and that self-service model of having common file areas so that you can get to the information you need. But what we want to do is not force people to go through a gatekeeper to either get project updates or information they need. We also need to steer away from having long status update meetings. And really use the meeting time to have more useful or problem solving or strategic conversations around the work that's happening. So, yeah, we want to get rid of that administrivia, basically, the minutiae of work, which you can kind of afford to waste time in the workplace and have it come, you know, no one likes long meetings anyway. And this, the good thing about this is it works for everyone. It doesn't matter whether you're in the office, out of the office. If you focus on this transparency of work through technology, it actually helps everyone. But that's just that first level. The next level is really more around that social cohesion. And I think there are opportunities to use some of the work tools themselves, but also to look at specialty tools that encourage and support social cohesion. There's a whole number of different areas that you could focus on, but I've wrapped this up in an idea that I've been talking about in the last sort of 18 months or so, which is this idea of the digital placemaking for the workplace. Placemaking comes out of urban design and it's about trying to reactivate common space into areas that, you know, communities that people can actually use in a more productive and communal fashion. And what we've seen over time is actually in the workplace, we're seeing these ideas come in and it's crossover as well from digital communities of sort of a community management idea where people are trying to activate the workplace with non-productive kind of activity in a way. It's social activity.
Like the table tennis table, for example.
All those things. So it could be a thing, it could be an activity. Let's take that to the next level and then think about how can we do this at a digital level so that we're not thinking about how do we activate a single physical space or place within your workplace, like with that pinball table, because that only helps the people who are there at the same time. What can we do to do this when we've got teams of people that could be, again, working from different offices, working from home at different times? So maybe it's a digital pinball table you put in place.
I like it.
You know, there's all sorts of things here. And really, we're only limited by our imagination. The simplest thing might be to allow some social sharing within a forum.
Yep.
But there are other ideas. There are little apps that can organize a sort of a roulette of meetings. meetings to encourage you to get to know people you don't know very well.
Fantastic.
There are ideas like wormhole cameras that create a continuous connection between different places. Again, you know, the sky's the limit on the sorts of things you might want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this runs on to another idea I've been thinking about. I love the idea of casual collisions that lead to conversations. Mm. You know, a bit like you're around the water bubbler talking about the footy, or you're in the office kitchen. But if we're all working remotely or just linked by our screens, I feel like the art of the casual collision kind of dies. But I feel like what you're talking about here, you might be able to extrapolate that out and recreate those in a virtual world. Do you think that would work?
Well, definitely. And this is part of it. You know, if you've heard of nudge theory, the idea is that we're trying to create opportunities for that kind of collision, and we're looking for digital interventions that might allow that. So a chat roulette, for example, you know, those meeting roulettes or coffee meetups is one way of doing that. And again, it works regardless of whether it's a purely remote digital work community or a hybrid community. You can organize these in different ways, but that's what it's all about. And this is the interesting thing. When you talk to architects and interior designers of physical space, physical workplaces, you know, one of the things they've been trying to organize throughout, I don't know, the last 5 decades of the modern workplace is to create serendipity. And I think there's a really interesting opportunity here for us to cross over and serve both purposes. If you design a physical space, and you might, again, you know, the pinball machine may actually be put in place within an organization to create the chance of random encounters. But again, it only works if people know about it, if they're at the same time together. What we want to do is probably nudge better use of those physical assets, so digital placemaking for the workplace has a role there. But equally, what we're saying is if people aren't going to have the opportunity ever to meet physically or only occasionally, then let's look at the digital realm and create some other opportunities for those random encounters.
Mate, as someone who loves to have a chat, I really am enjoying this aspect of our talk here today, because I think it's just such a valuable thing.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to create this link back to the intelligent workplace, because I see us collecting data from our physical workplaces and our digital workplaces, but we've yet to really join the dots on those two things. And you know, there are solutions like Swoop Analytics that will go into your Yammer or Workplace by Facebook communities and look at the social network of connections between the people that participate in those online forums. And they can help you, again, improve how you use those environments. Now, on the other side, again, there are solutions that are starting to also collect information about how space is being used. And there is links to the way you position people, how you sit people together within an organization. You may actually then find that you can change those arrangements to improve innovation. If you think about my ideal intelligent workplace, and again, we've got to deal with the creepy big brother aspects of this. We've got to make that work for people, right? And so that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
But if we can bring what we know about people, how they work together in those digital layers, you know, email, Yammer, whatever it might be, Microsoft Teams, look at those behaviors. And then we can say, well, let's actually see how else they may or may not be working together. And if you bring that information together, we can actually increase the efficiency and effectiveness of our workplaces.
It's fantastic, mate. Fantastic. Now let's move on to mental health and wellbeing, because that's a huge consideration in today's workplaces. And the intelligent workplace really needs to consider it. Have you seen some companies who have been really embracing this element?
So first of all, I think it's fair to say that most progressive organisations are really embracing the need to focus on health and wellbeing.
For sure.
And that might be addressed at a company policy level. It could be addressed through how the terms and conditions of employment, and then also the services that they bring that they offer to employees to help address health and wellbeing. There are actually technology solutions that focus on different aspects of these. I might talk more about some of the ideas of the solutions rather than particular examples, because it's quite a mixed bag. You know, organizations are doing different things across the board. But if we look at then the technology solutions that I'm seeing appear to support this, these range from, and this is one of my sort of favorite ideas, is an app that encourages you to go out and have a meeting outdoors.
Oh, nice.
To have a walking meeting or go to the park near your office and have a meeting. Even getting people out of the office and talking to each other in a different environment, that can support health and well-being. We've also had for a while the idea of corporate health programs, so you can track the number of steps or, you know, have challenges amongst teams that have some kind of physical activity or maybe it might be to do with diet. those sorts of issues around well-being. Then we're also seeing other solutions that will even help you measure and monitor the impact of different initiatives around health and well-being to see what's actually working. Again, that can support a whole range of different things, not just digital. But around mental health in particular, what concerns me the most, when you look at the ability of an organization to serve a large cohort of employees, is the risk that someone who's maybe at head office is in at work every day, they may be very well aware of the services available and they may find it easy to access them. But if you work part-time or you're working remotely, then your chance of maybe utilizing some of those services might be that little bit harder. Luckily, we're actually seeing people starting to offer solutions that address that issue of scale and access. This might sound odd, but some of those include chatbots for mental health benefits in the workplace. And the great thing about that is, you know, it's private, it's infinitely scalable. But I think what I find really interesting about that approach around using a tool like that to do it is that it also can be tailored to the individual. It's not just about having a poster or a guide, you know, how to improve your workplace mental health. You can actually have a tool that can try and understand the things you need and give you some feedback. The other point of that is also around the privacy, is that you can have a private conversation with that chatbot. You don't actually have to talk to a colleague about the issue if you're not comfortable in doing that. So I think there's some really interesting opportunities across this whole spectrum of health and well-being, and definitely mental health shouldn't be forgotten. Yeah. But I think really, you know, if you think about it as well, it's also having that proactive approach. Some of the tools that people would have access to already in their workplace, if you can target things around social support. So social support is about addressing things like workplace loneliness, but it's also about building up that sort of network of people. You know, you may have done a workplace survey that asks you if you have a best friend at work, because that's often an indicator of your sort of level of engagement and well-being. So anything that a digital tool can do to help foster that community, I think, is a good thing. Now, Chris, I'm a freelancer, so I don't have colleagues as such, but I can tell you I do have quite a vast network through different channels of people I know I've met physically and other people I haven't met physically. I've got virtual water coolers that I can find.
Nice.
You know, 24/7, there's someone in the world that I can have a chat with. And I think, again, that idea can apply in the workplace. You might be the only person of a particular job type in your part of the business, but you should be able to find someone through a virtual channel who shares the same background and interests.
Man, I'm not sure about you, but I feel like my life is absolutely scheduled down to the last second, you know, work commitments, children, the wife, all that sort of thing. And I find I have to sometimes schedule downtimes in my day, and with my wife, I have to tell her to take lunch. So maybe the intelligent workplace can start to look at people's calendars and start to block things out on their behalf for the betterment of their mental health.
Definitely, and this is that role of the intelligent layer, the nudges and the feedback that can help you to look at how you're performing, I think can be really helpful. I mean, it's always a balance. As I said, you know, there's the sort of big brother idea. Do we want a robot system to actually tell us something? But, you know, sometimes that feedback can be really useful. Now, I'm not opposed to automation. I'm also not opposed to the idea of having some human element to that intervention as well.
Yep.
I think this is, again, where it comes back to that creativity and also looking at this holistically, because I can, you know, your system can feed back to you, Chris, that you're spending too much time recording podcasts, okay?
Yeah.
Right? And you go, okay, noted.
Point taken.
If the other people you work with are all spending their time doing the same thing, you know, that creates an environment where even if you believe, you know, if you go, yeah, I am. Actually, now I've looked at what I'm doing, I'm spending far too much time doing X or Y. But if everyone else is still doing X and Y, it's going to be really hard for you to stop.
Yes.
So the technology in this context can only really support us if it's backed up by the culture.
Yep.
So,
agree.
And this is where the technology and people is really entwined.
Yeah.
Technology maybe can nudge us towards a certain behavior, but the environment has to support that. And again, this is where, if you think about it, you've got a system that gives you personal feedback about your performance or some of the bad habits it observes. You know, you're emailing people at 1 o'clock in the morning. That's not good. Okay. But it can only go so far if those behaviors aren't being modeled. And this is where things like Yammer and Workplace by Facebook, and of course the face-to-face interaction that goes on, even email, how leaders in particular, or managers, how they act in those online forums and when you're face-to-face, they're the things that set the expectations of behaviour. So we have to look at a range of different, if you like, channels and solutions to help us achieve our goals. It's not a silver bullet. We can't just put a bot in because, yeah, nothing happens, as I said, nothing happens in isolation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is what the intelligent workplace is. That's why it's so hard to define, and it's just continually growing because there are so many small bits and pieces that come together a bit like a bird's nest to create this, you know, fantastic user experience.
That's correct. Yeah. It's not a solution. The ideal intelligent workplace is really backed up. It's a vision and a goal that we want to achieve. And then we have to work through a process of designing the right bits of that puzzle for your particular workplace, your organization. What's going to make that work for you? And you're going to need lots of different solutions depending on the level of diversity within your workplace. How many offices do you have? What kind of work styles need to be supported? Frontline versus back office roles, all those different things. Every workplace will be different, but we can all be moving in the direction of visualizing, identifying what that intelligent workplace goal should be. And then we can start to gradually bring all those parts together.
There you go. See, that's why I got you on here, because we're starting to build a picture of what this thing could be. Fantastic. Now, mate, look, I've purposely focused a lot on the people element with you today, because in future episodes, I want to hone in on the guest's area of expertise or passion within the intelligent workplace. But I also know that you're a bit of a visionary in this area. So let's just spend the last few minutes together going a little bit blue sky with the idea. So I want to ask you, how far do you think we can go with this intelligent workplace, and what technology do you think will be the most influential?
Yeah, really good question.
Thank you.
Part of me wants to say, you know, it's not a question of how far, it's actually how well.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So if you think about it, as I said, productivity, I've probably emphasized this a little bit. It's about, you know, about the quality, and the experience is really about not being, you know, it's really about your imagination, about all the different ways we could do this. But I think one of the fundamental changes I think we have ahead of us in terms of how far can this intelligent workplace go is really we're seeing gradually, but you know, it's definitely there, a shift from being based on work being a matter of how much time you spend in the workplace.
Yes.
So, you know, the 9-to-5 day, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not things like, you know, universal income will really get adopted en masse is I don't know. But we do know that with a growing contingent workforce, as we actually have more people working longer and with more experience and with strong networks to support them, more and more people are going to want to work in a freelance model like I do.
Yes.
So the actual nature of work is changing. We're definitely moving to more project and outcome-based work, at least at that professional end. I'm not really talking about, you know, if you're working in a takeaway or serving in a supermarket, those kinds of roles are going to be around for a while as well. But I'm talking about the professional workforce, is how we're working is changing. So the issue is, can our digital tools support that new way of working? And that's going to require us to have systems that are open, because if you're employing a team that's made up of people who are freelancers, some might work for you, some might even work for a partner, business partner, how can we get them together and work effectively? So that's, I think, the really about how far can we go. On top of that, then we can layer all the cool stuff, you know, augmented reality, voice interfaces, chatbots. But I think the primary underlying driver is, how do we actually adapt our current enterprise tools so they actually fit to work in a more project and outcome-based economy.
You're getting me very excited for what the future may hold. Now, look, final question. On this podcast, I want to ask every one of my guests the same question at the end of these interviews, and I'm going to refer to it as the billion-dollar question. So, James, once the machines are doing all the work, what will humans do? Are we destined to become the pets of AI in the future?
Well, I think that makes for great science fiction.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I'm of a school of thought that thinks that humans will always stay one step ahead of the machines. We've already been through a couple of different economic revolutions, the most recent being the Industrial Revolution. And we're gradually moving from that phase into a new phase. Perhaps it's just a more focused and intensive repeat of that industrialization, but, you know, more and more automation, it's going to change the nature of work, no doubt. But we have other pressing problems, you know, like the environment, to solve for as well. And I think there's going to be a need for creativity and skills. So what's going to happen is that the need for repetitive work, that's going to be automated even further. So what's left, though, is going to be things that computers are just not either good at dealing with or, and this is, I think, that again, my point about humans always being one step ahead, humans will change, if you like, the value proposition. Do you want to have mass-produced, repetitive solutions, or do you want that handcrafted solution? We're always seeing a little bit of that trend. So I think things will keep moving for the better. I'm hopeful. And I think we're just going to have to see, again, there will be changes, but more and more automation doesn't mean that there's no role for humans. I'm a positive on that front.
Great. So you're telling me that Terminator Rise of the Machines was based on fiction, not fact?
Well, I hope so. Actually, I have switched off. I did say I've switched off Alexa. She's not listening, so she can't hear this. Oh, plotting and scheming. It's okay.
Good. Well, mate, look, thank you so much for being my first guest on this new podcast series. I've really enjoyed our 30-odd minutes together today. I am learning a lot. It has been absolutely fantastic. So thank you very much, and hopefully we'll talk again soon about the intelligent workplace. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Chris.
Good on you. Thanks for joining me on the Intelligent Workplace podcast, brought to you by LiveTiles. If you have any feedback or want to suggest a guest for a future show, email podcast@livetiles.nyc. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.